Hi, I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. This is a special show of the Spark My Muse podcast, and it is brought to you by Soul Care for Creators and Communicators. When you purchase Soul Care for Creators and Communicators on Amazon.com, the proceeds will help fund this show. I'm a little short on cash this month for August and looking into September, and it costs something to put the show together. So when you purchase that book, it will really go a long way to helping me make the show happen. So sometimes I get questions relating to soul care, and I will often email someone back or we'll talk on Facebook privately, and sometimes the questions seem to have a kind of pattern to them, and I thought, why not answer some of them right on the show, and maybe you'll get something out of it. And if you have questions about soul care, you can send them to me, anything really you want. If I don't know the answer, which is often the case, I have a lot of smart people I know who are experts in their field and can give some insights that I miss and that we can all miss as we're sorting through different problems or questions. And so the first one I'll go over is from Becky G, and it talks about, I'm going to be paraphrasing this kind of long question here, but talking about thinking of God as Father. And she says, I've never understood how it helps people to address God as Father. I had an absent father, and I've never really found a way to connect with God this way. What do you suggest? Is God, should I really start thinking about God as Father, or should I try something else? I think an interesting way to approach this is to think about, what are we thinking about when we think about God? We're often thinking of some picture in our heads, or we're projecting onto God some authority figure, whether it's a parent or caregiver, or even like a bigger authority figure, like the police or something like that. God is not a person, not a thing, and we label God with a name, but that label cannot possibly contain God, and God is not a thing that we can contain. But we can try to understand God with a few descriptions, but it really is going to fail us. So I don't think that God worries about what you call him or her. God is not a him or a her. There's no gender or body parts associated with God. God is spirit. And I think that's, people all over the world, even in all different traditions, often realize that when we're talking about the life force creator, the originator, this thing of living God, both personal and infinite, we aren't talking about a old white man in the sky with a beard or anything like that. But those types of things have been portrayed to us in art, and they've stuck, unfortunately. I think it's pretty limiting. And so I would say, if you feel like praying to God as mother, or just another adjective, shepherd, sustainer, rock, go for it. It shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter what we talk to, how we speak to God. Not everybody's going to agree with that. And there's going to be people who say you need to call God by Yahweh. And one of the things we can think about with the Hebrew word for God, Yahweh, is really a word that never was said. In order, I think, to preserve that holiness of God, is God cannot be contained by a name, and we're not going to call him a name. We're going to call him, when you see Lord in the Bible, the Lord, it would have been read as Adonai, which is like a master. Also in Hebrew language, people's names were given to them as not proper names exactly, but they were descriptive names. They would describe someone. Jacob means trickster, supplanter, somebody who's on the sly. It's not as his name per se. You know, we can't think of calling God like Billy, you know, Billy Jr. God is describes himself in terms of Yahweh as I am. Not even I am, it's more of a verb. It's a verb of presence. It's a verb of love in action. And it really defies, in fact, so strange that that Moses replies to God, I can't go tell Pharaoh, I am sent me. He didn't want to look like a complete crazy idiot. And so he's trying to get God to announce himself. And because God is the living God, it's not like all these other deities that were worshipped, he didn't want to be lumped in as a typical deity. So I would say abandon Father as the way you address God. I would that's what I would suggest to you, Becky. Okay, moving on to, this one's about forgiveness. Lauren B. says, I still have memories and hard feelings about a betrayal that happened with a family member about 10 years ago. What should I do to forgive when I can't forget? And one of the things that really helped me in terms of understanding forgiveness for myself, and forgiveness is really a continual process because our emotions are very tied up with it. But one of the things that helped me understand forgiveness in a whole new way was understanding actually how it's described in the Bible, because it's transactional. And that might sound cold or something, but let me explain. When you realize that forgiveness is actually just canceling a debt, kind of like, you know, writing down on a piece of paper, your debt is canceled. You're not thinking about the emotion and even the offense. You're just saying you're not going to collect on that debt anymore. And being relieved of the obligation to have your heart in it is actually liberating in itself. You might find that when you're allowed to forgive someone without feeling like you have completely turned the page, that might help you turn the page. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be easy, especially for certain kinds of betrayals. They're just so horrible and they're so ingrained in our memory. We can't seem to get them out, and they will bring up bad feelings. It'll trigger negative emotions. And I think to separate yourself from your emotion in the sense of I am not my thoughts. If I'm thinking a lot of negative thoughts, or I'm feeling hateful or bitter or having a grudge, that is not me. Those are my thoughts, and my thoughts are passing, and I can latch onto other thoughts that will be more helpful to me. And thinking of it as a transaction that is like an accounting transaction has helped me to say, I forgive this person, and I'm not going to continue carrying their debt that they can't repay. And I hope and pray that people can forgive me in the same way, even if their heart's not in it, that maybe they can truly forgive me if they think of it transactionally, and maybe the feelings will follow later. Justice involves a forgiveness aspect, but also a reconciliation aspect too, back into community or something like that. Ultimately, if we can repair our relationships after forgiveness, after that debt's canceled, and we can repair them back to wholeness, we're not talking about chummy best friends, but we're talking about a sort of peace between people or between parties. That really goes a long way in us achieving soul care and wellness for ourselves, but for others too. Long answer, Lauren B. Let's move on to the next one. So this one's from a freelance writer. This is an interesting one. I'm a freelance writer, and I find myself envying people who find success. I'm jealous of their success. I don't want to be, but I feel left out. That is from Matt A. This is a really interesting one. When we sense that we're envious and jealous of other people, for instance, in our field, finding success where we're not, has a lot to do with comparisons and expectations. Has a lot to do with where you think you should be or where you wish you were. And should and ought wind up finding their way in there. And I think it really starts with gratitude. I don't want to sound too much like Oprah here, but when you are doing something and you have the feeling like, wow, I get to do this, it really dispels those negative emotions of jealousy and envy and coveting other people's success. It really dispels them because you feel so blessed and grateful, like you've been given a gift. And as you concentrate more on those qualities of the blessing it is to be doing something you love, some of those other things will dissipate. I don't have a big solution for you, because I think we all struggle with envy and jealousy over other people's success at times. And I think it can also point to just our own passions. If you're feeling jealous and envious, it might be because they're tapping into one of your passions that you want to flesh out more. And see it as a good thing. It's like a reframing that needs to happen sometimes with our negative emotions. They're actually, we've decided they're negative, but I wonder if that's true. I wonder if they can't just be tools or signals for us to help us know ourselves better. And one thing that has struck me lately too is that the opinions of other people and the opinions we have of ourselves really, really affect our lives and our choices. And it's amazing to me that we consider the opinions of others to be these defining, motivating things, or the things that will decide important stuff about our life. And our own opinions about ourselves can get in the way too. But what if we just, even for just a brief period of time, just released those opinions that we have of ourselves and that we think other people have of us? What if we could hold them really loosely and not let them sort of browbeat us into feeling like we're not enough? I don't have all the answers for you, Matt A., but I do think that this is just a process that you work through. And as you gain more clarity for yourself and more joy in the work itself that you get to do, I think you'll find some peace and some relief. Okay, so in terms of soul care, this is from Erin D. She says, I've struggled with guilt and shame over some insurance fraud I was a part of, and I don't know how to get through it. It keeps coming up in my mind, and what do you suggest? So Erin, there's this fantastic book called Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. And one of the things I gained from that is the difference between guilt and shame. So it's really a cool way that she lays this out, because there's such clarity in the way this is defined. So guilt is important so we're not psychopaths. So guilt is important that if we do something wrong, we should feel bad about it and we should try to make it right. And we also should forgive ourselves. But shame is this prevailing kind of warm wash of anxiety and discomfort and lasting negativity, if you will, that something's wrong with us, ourselves. And it can start with guilt, and then shame is this thing that we carry that we tell ourselves that we're a certain way. Maybe you say, you know, I'm no good, or I'm a bad person, I don't deserve good things. Whatever it is that your shame whispers in your ear, whatever lies it says, it's telling you something very false about yourself. Shame is something that is just lies in wait to take you down into darkness. The thing about guilt is that it's about making a mistake and about fixing the mistake and not going back there. Shame is a decision about who you are as a person. And sometimes we co-opt that. If we've been shamed by our parents, for instance, we've decided that we should be shamed. And we've decided, especially I'm talking about into adulthood when we know better, we've decided that we want to see ourselves a certain way. When we think about shame as something that doesn't belong to us, that is not a part of who we are, I think we can get past that. You know, if you've done something wrong and you've tried to make it right, you made a mistake, cancel your own debt, the debt, your guilt debt, cancel it from your mind. As long as you've tried to make things right, it should be, if there's no way to make things right, there's not a lot you can do and you have to get through it. But don't feel that this is part of who you are. A mistake isn't part of who you are. There's always redemption is always possible. There's always an option. There's always a new tomorrow. And if we don't live like that, then we really spiral and we go to ugly places that we have no business going to. I hope that helps, Aaron. I feel very humbled by answering these questions because it brings up in me things that I've made mistakes with, and I realize how little I know. And so I'm just throwing out these responses, not as these sage answers or anything, but this is just my stab at it. And you'll probably get different advice depending on who you talk to. I hope this is helpful, and I pray that you find blessing in these responses. Okay, Todd M. We'll end on this one. Todd M. says, church is not working for me anymore. It hasn't been for a while. I've been going because I feel like I have to. I feel guilty leaving the church, but I don't know how to feel fed. Okay, Todd. I think a lot of us have been there, where it doesn't feel like the institution of work, or the institution of church, or the format, or how it's set up works. And I think a lot of people have struggled with this. They've left the church for a time. They don't feel connected. They don't know what to do. And there's a couple things I would suggest. Again, this is not like these definitive answers, that just there's not just one answer to this. You have to do some soul searching for yourself. I would pray about it. I would seek otherwise counsel as well. And so if we're going to church as a consumer, which is really typical in the United States, because we don't necessarily need church to survive as they do in other countries. Other countries, everybody does pool their money and they live communally. In the United States, we're pretty independent, we're pretty autonomous, and we come to church and we think, what can this do for me? And sometimes it does little, sometimes it's piss poor. It doesn't mean we need to leave the church and go hunt for greener pastures. It might mean that we think of church differently. So we might see it as, this is a place where I minister and serve others. Maybe church does nothing for you, but maybe you can help somebody who needs to hear a good sermon and their kids need to be watched in the nursery. And you could really be a servant that gives people a lot, and you have a lot to give, and you have gifts and talents that can be used to serve and help others. And in doing that, we feel more connected and we feel like our lives are more meaningful. I would also say that you can reach out and connect, and that church doesn't have to be a Sunday morning thing. You can come up with your own version of church in the sense of fellowship and connecting with others. I know for myself, we did these small groups, as lots of churches do. We did small groups, and what the small groups did for me is sort of ignited in me a passion to try to get to know God better, and it eventually brought me to seminary. I felt like those small groups were a good starting point, but they seemed after a while shallow, and the craving and longing for God in a deeper way I didn't feel was really shared in the same way in my small group. But it was a great first step to get me on a different path and to create a longing in me to search to know God. So about God, but also know God in a more familiar way. Another thing that I'm trying to initiate right now is a supper club, which it will like bringing back potluck and having people over to the house once a month and just talking and eating. And doesn't have to be reading a bunch of scripture or devotions or prayer or anything like that. It could just be getting to know people beyond that hi, how are you quick thing that happens sometimes in church services. I want to build friendships and relationships and know people outside of the context of this meeting. I want to know people for who they are, and I want to share life with them. And that might be what you're craving, that kind of connection. Instead of seeing it as, well, this message didn't do anything for me, or this music stinks, or whatever it is that is bothering you about your church situation, you can create church in your own way, in the sense of getting together with people who love God and love you, and people you can trust or develop bonds and friendships with. And this will be very life-giving. Todd, I hope you continue. I hope you don't just ditch, because just bouncing from church to church isn't going to help. Now, if there's a big problem with some kind of abuse or something at church, obviously you're going to have to rethink what I just said and do it differently. But I hope you do find a place there, a place of belonging and connection, and I wish you blessing in that. So that's it for now. I really hope you'll send your questions to me if you have them, any kind. I'll take a stab at it if I can, and I can air them here. And I'm also going to try to do a Periscope session that would be live streaming, taking questions and answering them and getting your feedback and insights. I often feel that we is better than me. So collectively, we're better than any responses I can come up with on my own. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you the next time. Bye-bye. I really hope you enjoyed the show today. Please come by sparkmymuse.com for related show notes and links and all kinds of other information. Don't forget to subscribe, and please give us 5 stars on iTunes.